Hi, Dave Emmer here. This is For the Record program number 924. Technocratic Fascism, the High Profile Hacks, and the Obverse Oswald. Update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This is being recorded on September 22nd of the year 2016. Hi there, boys and girls. You know what time it is? That's right. It's time for another exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie isn't like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. In this program, we are going to be continuing with our analysis of the relationship between what I call Team Snowden, basically WikiLeaks and Snowden, and the alt-right milieu that is embodied in both WikiLeaks and Snowden and the Trump campaign. In For the Record, at the end of For the Record 922, and at the beginning of For the Record 923, I read an article from the Washington Post, which talked about the evolution of what I call the Trumpenkampfverband, the Donald Trump political phenomenon, as having evolved not only from the political forces embodied in Ron Paul, but beyond that, the political forces embodied in David Duke. And David Duke and Ron Paul are in turn inextricably linked with the political forces that are embodied in WikiLeaks and in Edward Snowden. Snowden and WikiLeaks are joined at the hip. It was American WikiLeaker Jacob Applebaum, one of the developers of the Tor network, who appears to have facilitated Snowden's transit from Hawaii to Hong Kong. Then Sarah Harrison, Julian Assange's ex-girlfriend, and a fellow who was a financier of WikiLeaks, helped Snowden go from Hong Kong to Moscow, thereby putting the last at the Obama-Clinton State Department's efforts at a reboot with Russia. The WikiLeaks operation has now emerged as what is more or less the official Donald Trump campaign online dirty tricks branch, so to speak, or annex. Roger Stone, the longtime GOP dirty trickster whose political resume stretches back to Watergate, is now, by his own account, in close communication with Julian Assange. He claims a mutual friend put them in touch. I would like to know who that friend is. Might that be Eddie the Friendly Spook or Karl Rove? One wonders, or maybe even Donald Trump. One wonders who that might be, but what is really quite clear is not only that Russia is being framed for the high-profile hacks, one of which, the quote, hack, unquote, of NSA, which resulted in the, frankly, ludicrous public auction of some of these cyber weapons online, and was accompanied by a Boris and Natasha-like broken English commentary, which really goes to illustrate what author Edith Wharton stated when she noted that, quote, a frivolous society can only achieve dramatic significance through what its frivolity destroys. And that is very much what we are seeing here. One of the nicknames I have given Eddie the Friendly Spook. In addition to Eddie the Friendly Spook, I have called him the Obverse Oswald, because whereas Lee Harvey Oswald was trafficked around the world, including into the former Soviet Union, and infiltrated into left-cover intelligence or left-cover organizations, and then framed for the assassination of JFK and killed before he could successfully defend himself, thereby pinning the assassination of JFK on the left, on the commies, Cuba, the Soviet Union, or D, all of the above. In fact, Lee Harvey Oswald was innocent. By the same token, Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden has been trafficked around, and as we have seen, not only was Snowden himself working for CIA when he decided to betray NSA, but Team Snowden, including Jacob Applebaum, in addition to tracking back to WikiLeaks, also tracks back to what we might call CIA derivatives, things like the Broadcasting Board of Governors or the Open Technology Fund or things of that kind. More about that later in the program. Whereas, however, Oswald was portrayed as a villain and then killed before he could publicly rehabilitate himself at the trial, Eddie the Friendly Spook, who is in fact a villain of the First Order, just like WikiLeaks, is being portrayed as a hero. And what we're going to do in this program is to take a look once again at the apparent framing of Russia for the high-profile hacks and the evidence pointing in the direction of Team Snowden in those hacks. Obviously, WikiLeaks, which disclosed the information from the DNC hacks, is now really more or less openly working for the Trump campaign. Jacob Applebaum, the American WikiLeaker, and the man who appears to have facilitated Snowden's travels from Hawaii to Hong Kong, is also more or less overtly anti-Hillary Clinton. In this program, we're going to take a look at an enigmatic message that was sent by Eddie the Friendly Spook, which may have proved to be a signal or cue for the release of the ANT and TAO NSA cyber weapons. Experts, and we have quoted those in For the Record 923, have opined that, yeah, the information does appear to be genuine in the sense that the NSA TAO or ANT cyber weapons are the real deal. What one observer said, they are the keys to the kingdom. But as we are going to see, the code from those dates to 2013, the very year that Eddie the Friendly Spook embarked on his world travels, courtesy again of people like Sarah Harrison and Jacob Applebaum of WikiLeaks, both of whom, along with Laura Poitras and Peter Sunday, the founder of the Pirate Bay website on which WikiLeaks first held sway, are in Germany as well. But first, the cryptic tweet that Edward Snowden released, it is unclear exactly what this was intended for. Some interpreted this as meaning that Snowden was dead and that this was his dead man's switch, fail-safe device. That was not, in fact, the case. Other cryptic tweets to an associate named Barton Gellman, G-E-L-L-M-A-N, also, well, they were cryptic. They were not apparently indicating that Edward Snowden was in any kind of physical danger. Whatever the meaning of these cryptic tweets, and Eddie Snowden would appear to be very much alive, it is worth contemplating as to whether or not the cryptic tweets, which preceded by a few days the release of the NSA, ANT, and TAO hacking tools, might have been a signal by Eddie the Friendly Spook to Team Snowden, so to speak. Exactly what tools, what files Eddie the Friendly Spook had in his cache remains to be seen, because no one that I'm aware of has seen the entire thing. James Bamford, who was probably the highest profile journalist to write about NSA, did meet with Snowden in Moscow. He has not apparently seen all of the files that Edward Snowden had with him. So we're going to begin by taking a look at the cryptic tweets that were issued by Edward Snowden and whether or not these were actually the signal for the release of the ANT and TAO hacking tools that were at the core of the NSA, quote, hack, unquote. Then we are going to review some things about the DNC hack and why that does not appear to have been Russia, or authored by Russia, the extensive propaganda to the contrary notwithstanding. And we are also going to take a look at why the NSA hack not only was not Russia, but why it wasn't in all probability a hack at all. We are going to take a look, however, at the fact that Eddie the Friendly Spook, whose tweet may very well have cued the release of the ANT and TAO hacking cyber weapons by the shadow brokers, unquote. Eddie the Friendly Spook, however, said, yep, this appears to have been a hack, and the hack was done by Russia, whereas, in fact, the evidence points in the other direction. So what we have is Eddie the Friendly Spook issuing some cryptic tweets, which may very well have been signals for the shadow brokers, whoever they may be, to release the ANT and TAO hacking tools. It does not appear to have been Russia, but Eddie the Friendly Spook says, yep, it was Russia, and it was a hack. In fact, the very files that were put up for auction, which is highly unusual, by the shadow brokers, as the unnamed NSA, quote, hackers, unquote, call themselves. WikiLeaks then announces that they have these files as well and that they are going to put them online. Bamford has noted in an article that he wrote for Reuters that one of the suspects in the release of the ANT and TAO files is none other than Jacob Applebaum, the American WikiLeaker, who again appears to have facilitated Eddie the Friendly Spook's exit from Hawaii to Hong Kong.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at SpitfireList.com. Also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
So first, the cryptic tweets from Snowden that may very well have been a signal of some kind to release the files. Again, it is not clear just what was being said, but the relatively close proximity in time between Edward Snowden's cryptic tweets and the release of the files by the, quote, shadow brokers, unquote, is something to contemplate. And it is altogether possible that these cryptic tweets were, in fact, a signal of some kind. The International Business Times of August 8th of 2016 has an article by Jason Murdoch, M-U-R-D-O-C-K. Is Edward Snowden dead? Conspiracy theory claims whistleblower killed after cryptic tweet. Rumors of his demise have been denied by confidant Glenn Greenwald. Exiled NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden sparked intrigue on August 5th after tweeting a 64-digit code to his 2 million-strong Twitter following, which conspiracy theorists quickly assumed meant that he had met his untimely demise. The fears were sparked by a Russian news website called Sputnik, which reported the now-deleted tweet could have been a dead man's switch, unquote, an insurance code set up to aid the release of another trove of documentation, quote, if he did not check into the computer at a certain time, unquote. However, the rumors of his death or kidnapping have been denied by Snowden's close confidant, Glenn Greenwald, who replied to one concerned tweet with, quote, he's fine, unquote. In any case, since the posting, Snowden's own Twitter presence has been eerily muted, that last sentence again. In any case, since the cryptic posting, Snowden's own Twitter presence has been eerily muted. Previously, Snowden has indicated that he had such an insurance tactic in place should something happen to him while he is living under asylum in Russia. In one report by Wired magazine published in 2013, after the initial NSA disclosures hit the headlines, Greenwald described the system in place, quote, it's really just a way to protect himself against extremely rogue behavior on the part of the U.S., by which I mean violent actions toward him designed to end his life, and it's just a way to ensure that nobody feels incentivized to do that, he said. In response to the code, which appears on the surface to be a form of hash, journalist Barton, B-A-R-T-O-N, Gelman, G-E-L-L-M-A-N, also took to social media to note that the tweet had a, quote, private meaning, unquote, and was not intended for the general audience. Everyone requesting proof of life for me and at Snowden take a deep breath. Some tweets have private meaning, unquote, he wrote on August 6th. Based on this, it is likely that the long code is a form of verification used to prove to a contact of Snowden that he is the legitimate sender or recipient of a communication. Using a direct mail message, for example, would leave metadata and therefore a record of the conversation taking place. Gelman, who is currently writing a book about the Edward Snowden leaks, was previously embroiled in another recent post that sparked controversy after the former NSA contractor mysteriously tweeted, quote, it's time, unquote. So again, it is unclear exactly what these mysterious coded tweets actually have in mind. Do note, however, that obviously Snowden is very much alive for the time being. Exactly what he meant by its time remains to be seen. Was he, in fact, sending a signal that the release of the ANP and TAO hacking tools should be accomplished? Note that shortly after that, the shadow brokers then put their hacked, quote-unquote, information online and put it up for auction in an altogether unconvincing attempt at framing Russia for what apparently was not a hack at all. Let's take a step back and review some information about the DNC hack, the files from which were released by WikiLeaks on the eve of the Democratic Convention, and which not only led to the resignation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, but also to the acting up, so to speak, by the Bernie bots, who put on a display of extreme political immaturity that the rest of the world was holding their hands. It was actually a very eloquent letter from a fellow in Ireland about the reaction of thinking people around the world watching the Bernie bots acting up and booing and so forth. And the letter writer noted that when you are the most powerful nation on earth, that bestows a certain degree of responsibility on its voting citizens. And for them to allow someone like Donald Trump to become president of the U.S. while picking nits over Hillary Clinton, is really something the rest of the human race is finding absolutely incredible. I have spoken about Donald Trump at great length. I did a 5-program series, The Trump and Confabonda, parts 1 through 5. That's for the record 918 through 922. And I believe that Trump is basically a candidate of the underground Reich and the Bormann group, about which I have been speaking so long. One thing I did not mention is that if, in fact, Trump does get into office, it is going to be disastrous for the U.S. Not only will his economic program cutting taxes drastically on the rich while affecting a huge increase on the defense budget, that will in and of itself mandate savage cuts to social services. They will also do a great deal of harm to the economy and indeed, I think investor confidence in the American economy is going to plummet if Trump gets in. Nonetheless, however, do note that, again, the DNC hack caused all kinds of problems for the Democrats and helped Trump out. That came from WikiLeaks on the eve of the Democratic Convention, and WikiLeaks, like Eddie Snowden, is the embodiment of the alt-right. The fact that the so-called progressive sector has completely missed this as well, that is really pretty much to be expected at this stage of the game. And with Roger Stone communicating directly, apparently, and coordinating directly, apparently, with Julian Assange, that should wake some people up. However, it does not seem to have done that. Now, reviewing about the DNC hack, which has been blamed on Russia, and the fruits of which were released by WikiLeaks on the eve of the Democratic Convention. This reviewing from the Council on Foreign Relations blog of August 1st of 2016. This is by Dr. Sandro, S-A-N-D-R-O, Gaiken or Gaiken, G-A-Y-C-K-E-N. Blaming Russia for the DNC hack is almost too easy. Skipping down. A critical look exposes the significant flaws in the attribution of the DNC hack to Russia. First of all, the technical evidence can be spoofed. Although some argue that spoofing the mound of uncovered evidence is too much work, it can be easily done by a small team of good attackers in just 3 or 4 days. Second, the tools used by, quote, Cozy Bear, unquote, appeared on the black market when they were first discovered years ago and have been recycled and used against many other targets, including against German industry. The reuse and fine-tuning of existing malware happens all the time. Third, the language, the location, settings, and compilation metadata can be easily altered by changing basic settings on the attacker's computer in 5 minutes without the need of special knowledge. None of the technical evidence is convincing. It would only be convincing if the attackers had used entirely novel, unique, and sophisticated tools with unmistakable indicators pointing to Russia, supported by human intelligence, not by malware analysis. The DNC attackers also had very poor, almost comical operational security or OPSEC. State actors tend to have a quality assurance review when developing cyber attack tools to minimize the risk of discovery and leaving obvious crumbs behind. Russian intelligence services are especially good. They are highly capable, tactically and strategically agile and rational. They ensure that offensive tools are tailored and proportionate to the signal they want to send, the possibility of disclosure and public perception, and the odds of escalation. The shoddy OPSEC just doesn't fit what we know about Russian intelligence. Given these arguments, blaming Russia is not a slam dunk. Why would a country with some of the best intelligence services in the world commit a whole series of really stupid mistakes in a highly sensitive operation. Why pick a target that has a strong chance of leading to escalatory activity when Russia is known to prefer incremental actions over drastic ones? Why go through the trouble of a false flag when doing nothing would have been arguably better? And note that he says, why would they make a whole lot of really stupid mistakes in a highly sensitive operation? And note that why pick a target that has a strong chance of leading to escalatory activity? In addition to helping out Trump, of course, by releasing the information on the eve of the Democratic Convention, both the DNC hack and the NSA non-hack that we're about to talk about have helped to game the American political landscape further in an anti-Russian and pro-Cold War II direction. Hillary Clinton has been following the popular media portrayal of these events by saying basically this is Russia allied with Donald Trump. And as we looked at in For the Record 918 and 919, rather than being a Russian slash Kremlin slash Putin dupe, in fact, Trump's relatively benign comments about Russia, Putin, and Ukraine have actually been a manifestation of traditional German Ostpolitik, in my opinion, very much like the open letter to Stalin from 1949 in the Burger Zeitung that we spoke about in For the Record 918. I would also note that Trump's comments about Russia, Ukraine, etc. are certainly not going to hurt the Trump real estate empire's dealings with Russia or countries that are allied with Russia. And as we looked at in For the Record 920, 921 and 922, the big money behind Donald Trump appears to be Bormann slash underground Reich money. Deutsche Bank is the go-to bank for the Trump real estate operations.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
We're going to review another element from For the Record 923. Now, this is about the shadow brokers and their release of the AMT and TAO NSA cyber weapons. The authenticity of what was put online does not appear to be questioned by cyber experts. However, the accessing of this information does not appear to have, in all probability, been accomplished through a hack, but rather through someone who infiltrated NSA and downloaded the information onto a USB stick, rather like what Edward Snowden did. And the portrayal of this as Russia, with just the ludicrous, broken English Boris and Natasha-like verbiage that accompanies or in which the shadow broker's messages are couched is frankly ludicrous. And again, it calls to mind Edith Wharton's observation that, quote, a frivolous society can only achieve dramatic significance through what its frivolity destroys. From Business Insider Nordic, from August 16th of 2016, an article by Paul Zoldra, S-Z as in zebra, O-L-D-R-A. Here's why the supposed NSA hack, unquote, is unlike anything we've ever seen before. He makes a couple of, makes several points, but chief among them, this does not appear to have been a hack at all. Secondly, if it had been a hack, the hackers would not have behaved in the way that they behaved. Again, here's why the supposed NSA hack is unlike anything we've ever seen before, by Paul Zolga, Business Insider, Nordic of August 16th of this year, 2016, skipping down. The shadow brokers claim to have hacked, unquote, a server belonging to the NSA is fishy in and of itself. According to ex-NSA insiders who spoke with Business Insider, the agency's hackers don't just put their exploits and toolkits online where they can be potentially pilfered. The more likely scenario for where the data came from, says ex-NSA research scientist Dave Aitel, or Aitel, A-I-T-E-L, is an insider who downloaded it onto a USB stick. Skipping down. When hackers gain access to a server, they keep quiet about it so they can stay at that server. One of the many strange things about this incident is the very public nature of what transpired. When a hacker takes over your computer, they don't start activating your webcam or running weird programs because you'd figure out pretty quickly that something was up and you'd try to get rid of them. If the shadow brokers owned the NSA's command and control server, then it would probably be a much better approach to just sit back, watch, and try to pivot to other interesting things that they might be able to find. Instead, the group wrote on Pastebin, that's capital P-A-S-T-E-B-I-N, a website where you can store text that, quote, "We follow equation group traffic. We find equation group source range. We hack equation group. We find many, many equation group cyber weapons," unquote, which immediately signals to this alleged NSA hacker group that they have a big problem. And again, note the broken English, very much like Boris and Natasha. And then Paul Zolga goes on to observe, "People sell exploits all the time, but they hardly ever talk about it. Most of the time, an exploit is found by a security research firm, which then writes about it and reports it to the company so it can fix the problem. Or a hacker looking for cash will take that found exploit and sell it on the black market. So it would make sense for a group like Shadow Brokers to want to sell their treasure trove, but going public with it is beyond strange. If, on the other hand, this was psychological warfare intended to effect a misdirection, then that might have been the reason." And indeed, some of the misdirection on this comes from Eddie Snowden himself, who did exactly what Dave Aitel, or Aitel, was talking about. He took a bunch of NSA files while working for the CIA, by the way, and downloaded them onto USB. I should say he was working for CIA when he made the decision to do this. I suspect he was working for CIA all the time, and he was part of what Colonel L. Fletcher probably set up as the focal point networks. Again, from that same article by Paul Zolga, skipping down. "If you ask ex-NSA contractor Edward Snowden, however, the public leak and claims of the shadow brokers seem to have Russian fingerprints all over them, and it serves as a warning from Moscow to Washington. The message: if your policymakers keep blaming us for the DNC hack, then we can use this hack to implicate you in much more. That could have significant foreign policy consequences," Snowden wrote on Twitter, "particularly if any of those operations targeted U.S. allies, particularly if any of those operations targeted elections." One of the things that Snowden is doing here is foreshadowing the possibility that a, quote, Russian, unquote, hack on U.S. elections might be used to invalidate results. Might also have implications for Ukraine as well. But again, note that Snowden here, who, whatever, he's an evil SOB, but he is not stupid, and he is very tech savvy, and he must know but the shadow broker's operations are not characteristic of a hack at all, but much more characteristic of an insider using old-fashioned human intelligence espionage to download the files onto a USB drive. And note also that the files that were released end in 2013, which is when Eddie the Friendly Spook accomplished his, I call it Snowden's ride. That's when the Snowden operation, the intelligence operation for which Eddie the Friendly Spook has fronted, was formally undertaken in the public arena. From National Public Radio of August 17th of 2016, shadow brokers claim to have hacked the NSA hackers. The code released by the shadow brokers dates most recently to 2013, the same year Edward Snowden leaked classified information about the NSA's surveillance programs. Snowden also noted that the released files end in 2013. When I came forward, NSA would have migrated offensive operations to new servers as a precaution, he suggested, a move that would have cut off the hackers' access to the server, except that they are not behaving the way a hacker would behave. It's extremely unlikely that this was a hack, but rather someone who was acting in the way that Edward Snowden was acting, and someone who was trying to make it look like Russia. Again, I have compared the clumsy Boris and Natasha-like broken English, as well as the complete departure from technical methodology in the DNC hack. I've compared that with the painting of Oswald Red, and that my characterization of Snowden as the obverse Oswald is looking more and more prescient. James Bamford, last name B-A-M-F-O-R-D, had an article on the Reuters website of August 24th, and Bamford, who probably has done more writing and is probably the highest profile writer about NSA, has written that one of the people that the evidence, in the direction of which the evidence points, is Jacob Applebaum. Again, Applebaum, the American WikiLeaker, a developer of the Tor network, and the fellow who appears to have facilitated Eddie the Friendly Spook's travels from Hawaii to Hong Kong. Commentary. Evidence points to another Snowden at the NSA. This is by James Bamford of Reuters of August 24th of 2016. Experts who have analyzed the files suspect that they date to October of 2013, 5 months after Edward Snowden left his contractor position with the NSA and fled to Hong Kong carrying flash drives containing hundreds of thousands of pages of NSA documents. Skipping down. Enter WikiLeaks. Just 2 days after the first shadow broker's message, Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, sent out a Twitter message. We had already obtained the archive of NSA cyber weapons released earlier today, Assange wrote, and we'll release our own pristine copy in due course, unquote. The month before, Assange was responsible for releasing the tens of thousands of hacked DNC emails that led to the resignation of the four top committee officials, and also, I would add, may have had something to do with the fact that Seth Rich was murdered, a murder that Assange was obliquely hinting was affected by Hillary Clinton or the DNC. And given the detailed and intimate nature of the information about DNC contributors that were released in the WikiLeaks files, including credit card numbers, email addresses, home phone numbers, cell phone numbers, etc. The murder of Seth Rich, I think, is something that needs to be contemplated in the context of what WikiLeaks released and also in the context of Julian Assange's networking with Roger Stone. Skipping down, about Assange and Jacob Applebaum. There also seems to be a link between Assange and the leaker who stole the ANT catalog and the possible hacking tools. Among Assange's close associates is Jacob Applebaum, a celebrated hacktivist and the only known publicly known WikiLeaks staffer in the U.S. until he moved to Berlin in 2013 in what he called a political exile, unquote, because of what he said was repeated harassment by U.S. law enforcement personnel. In 2010, a Rolling Stone magazine profile labeled him the most dangerous man in cyberspace, unquote. In December of 2013, Applebaum was the first person to reveal the existence of the ANT catalog, the ANT catalog, at a conference in Berlin without identifying the source. That same month, he said he suspected the U.S. government of breaking into his Berlin apartment, and he also co-wrote an article about the catalog in Der Spiegel. But again, he never named a source, which led many to assume mistakenly that it was Snowden. And this, by the way, because Bamford did not see these files in the files that Edward Snowden showed him. Doesn't mean they weren't in there. It just means that James Bamford did not get full access to what would have been released in the Dead Man's Switch file dump. Skipping down about Applebaum and his antipathy toward Hillary Clinton. Shortly thereafter, he turned his attention to Hillary Clinton. At the screening of a documentary about Assange in Cannes, France, Applebaum accused her of having a grudge against him and Assange, and that if she were elected president, she would make their lives difficult. It's a situation that will possibly get worse, unquote, if she is elected to the White House, he said, according to Yahoo News. Skipping down again. In hacktivist style and in what appears to be phony, broken English, this new release of cyber weapons also seems to be targeting Clinton. It ends with a long and angry final message, unquote, against wealthy elites breaking laws. But elites' top friends announce, no law broken, no crime committed, then elites run for president. Why run for president when already control country like dictatorship? Unquote. Again, this fits very nicely into the Donald Trump characterization of crooked Hillary. And in fact, that is something that got going with the Bernie bots as well. People who never asked themselves why St. Bernard was receiving financing from Karl Rove's American Crossroads Super PAC. And I would note again that the email account used by the shadow brokers in the NSA, non-hack, was a German email account. And note that, as I mentioned, Jacob Applebaum and Sarah Harrison and Laura Poitras and Peter Sundby are all in Germany right now. And I've opined that the whip hand in the L'Affaire Snowden was BND, but that they were using the focal point networks that were set up by Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty. And I think the underground Reich faction of the CIA was deeply involved as well, coordinating with BND in this operation. From an article in Forbes magazine of August 16th of 2016, Edward Snowden, Russia is chief suspect in NSA hack. This by Thomas Fox Brewster, and skipping down, a member of the network. Fowle said that Putinova had only ever been forced to hand over the encrypted data of its users a few times, and it has a transparency report where it discloses those cases. However, we release data only in very, very few cases, and when we have to provide the data due to a court order, it is still encrypted, Fowle added, going on to explain the company's stance on surveillance. They are very anti-surveillance, and this was the German email account used by the allegedly Russian shadow brokers. Again, it doesn't even appear to have been a hack. Certainly, the behavior is not characteristic of a hack, but more characteristic of the downloading of the files onto a USB drive, and they date from 2013, the code dating to October of 2013. One wonders if, again, Jacob Applebaum, the first person to disclose the existence of the ANT files and an associate of WikiLeaks and Eddie Snowden, may have been the source.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Revealing some information that we used in For the Record 891 and 895. Now, I have noted and referred briefly to that in this program that when Eddie Snowden in the summer of 2009 was suddenly inspired by the Angel of Mercy to sacrifice himself on behalf of an unknowing humanity about NSA surveillance. In fact, most of what Snowden has spoken about has been public record for the better part of 20 years. I've talked about it from open sources since the late 1990s. When one takes a look at Snowden, again, who was working for CIA when he decided to go to work for NSA and basically blow their expletive deleter or put their business in the street, so to speak, Snowden was working for CIA, and when one examines the privacy advocates, one finds the Broadcasting Board of Governors, the parent organization now of organizations like Radio Free Asia, Radio Free Europe, Voice of America, all of which were run by and all of which have evolved from CIA. And in turn, Radio Free Asia has a spin-off, the Open Technology Fund, which has developed most of the, quote, secret, unquote, technologies and devices that are recommended by those around Team Snowden. Reviewing quickly, and by the way, one of the people who has apparently taken money from these CIA cutouts is none other than Jacob Applebaum, to whom James Bamford pointed in that article from Reuters. From the Pando Daily of March 1st of 2016, an article by Yasha, Y-A-S-H-A, Levine, L-E-V-I-N-E, Internet Privacy Funded by Spooks, A Brief History of the BBG, skipping down. Jacob Applebaum's willingness to work directly for an old CIA cutout like Radio Free Asia in a nation long targeted for regime change is certainly odd, to say the least. Particularly since Applebaum made a big public show recently claiming that, though it pains him that Tor takes so much money from the U.S. military, he would never take money from something as evil as the CIA. Applebaum's financial relationships with various CIA spinoffs like Radio Free Asia and the Broadcasting Board of Governors go further. From 2012 to 2013, Radio Free Asia transferred about $1.1 million to Tor in the form of grants and contracts. This $1 million comes on top of another $3.4 million Tor received from Radio Free Asia's parent agency, the BBG, starting from 2007. And still more from that same article. Though many of the apps and tech backed by Radio Free Asia's OTF are unknown to the general public, they are highly respected and extremely popular among the anti-surveillance internet activist crowd. OTF-funded apps have been recommended by Eddie Snowden, covered favorably by ProPublica and the New York Times technology reporters, and repeatedly promoted by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Everyone seems to agree that OTF-funded privacy apps offer some of the best protection from government surveillance you can get. In fact, just about all the featured open source apps on EFF's recent secure messaging scorecard were funded by Radio Free Asia's Open Technology Fund, i.e., the CIA. Skipping down again. You think of anti-surveillance activists like Chris Segoyan, Jacob Applebaum, Cory Doctorow, and Julian York would be staunchly against outfits like BBG and Radio Free Asia, and the role they have played and continue to play in working with defense and corporate interests to project and impose U.S. power abroad. Instead, these radical activists have knowingly joined the club and in doing so have become willing pitchmen for a wing of the very same U.S. national security state that they so adamantly oppose. This last sentence again. Instead, and radical belongs in quotes here, it's not, but instead, these quote radical unquote activists have knowingly joined the club and in doing so have become willing pitchmen for a wing of the very same U.S. national security state that they so adamantly oppose. That also belongs, oppose belongs in quotes as well. What we're going to do next is to review some of what we have spoken about in terms of what I have termed technological or technocratic fascism. It is quite grotesque that the very time that Team Snowden is working for Donald Trump, and again, the alt-right forces that are embodied in Donald Trump are the same ones that are embodied in Ron Paul and David Duke, both of whom are inextricably linked with WikiLeaks and Team Snowden. With the release of the Oliver Stone film about Eddie the Friendly Spook, there are now once again calls for Barack Obama to pardon Snowden. And Julian Assange has weighed in saying, well, if the government will pardon Bradley Manning, then I'll turn myself in. All of which is going to increase pressure on Obama and the Clinton campaign in an area that they are counting on doing well, namely the young people, because young people have grown up with the internet and with mobile technology, and many of them with social media. And even though the basics about what Snowden talked about have been online, they haven't been widely disseminated, and that has caused a lot of alienation on the part of young people from Obama and from Clinton. Reviewing from uncomputing.org of April 23rd of 2015, at the very time that once again Eddie Snowden is being hailed as a saint, he is basically doing to democracy what, and in partnership with Julian Assange and very possibly Jacob Applebaum as well, he is doing to democracy what the assassination of JFK did to democracy, and that in turn is expressed by David Golombia, Golumbia, in Tor, Technocracy and Democracy. Skipping down. Such technocratic beliefs are widespread in our world today, especially in the enclaves of digital enthusiasts, whether or not they are part of the giant corporate digital leviathan. Hackers, civic, ethical, white, and black hat alike, hacktivists, WikiLeaks fans, and Julian Assange, anonymous members, even Edward Snowden himself, walk hand in hand with Facebook and Google in telling us that coders don't just have good things to contribute to the political world, but that the political world is theirs to do with what they want, and the rest of us should just stay out of it. The political world is broken, they appear to think, rightly at least in part, and the solution to that, they think, wrongly at least for the most part, is for programmers to take political matters into their own hands. And again, what they're saying here, the basic assumption, the political world is theirs to do with what they want, and the rest of us should just stay out of it. And again, that is where we have gotten to. We basically have Eddie the Friendly Spook, even as he is being hailed as the second coming of Jesus, basically doing for democracy what the JFK assassination did for democracy. He and Julian Assange and very possibly Jacob Applebaum, certainly Team Snowden, is working for Donald Trump. You have the DNC hack, which in all probability was not done by Russia, and it provides WikiLeaks with information to release on the eve of the Democratic convention, hurting Hillary Clinton. You have Roger Stone openly apparently networking with Julian Assange, courtesy of a mutual friend. I wonder if that might be Karl Rove. And now you have Eddie the Friendly Spook, whose mysterious cryptic tweets may very well have been a signal for the release of the AMT and TAO catalogs by the, quote, shadow brokers, unquote. Jacob Applebaum certainly was aware of these. And WikiLeaks then announced that they were going to release pristine copies of that same, those same pieces of information. I would note that having WikiLeaks and Eddie the Friendly Spook, both of whom, due frankly to very shoddy media coverage, pulling for Donald Trump is very likely to bear some very bitter fruit. We have noted in our series on the Trump and Confabanda that Donald Trump Jr. has been active in some of the tweeting that has gone. Actually, we've talked about the neo-Nazi dog whistles that have been employed by the Trump campaign. There are a number of them, and again, in For the Record, programs 920, 921, and 922, I go into that. Donald Trump Jr. appears to be very much into the whole alt-right slash Nazi online cultural milieu, and a lot of the really offensive neo-Nazi dog whistles have been coming from Donald Jr. I have these articles in the written description for the Record 924. I will enumerate them and read the headlines. To read the text, you're going to have to go to the actual description, because I do not have this. We do not have time to go into this. It will be, no doubt, in a future program. From Law Story of September 20th of 2016 by Travis Gettys, G-E-T-T-Y-S, Trump Jr.'s Skittles tweet is based on two different white supremacist memes and Nazi propaganda. And then from Talking Points Memo Livewire of September 12th of 2016, Trump ally, that would be the aforementioned Roger Stone working directly with Julian Assange, Trump ally and son share meme featuring symbol of white nationalist alt-right by Allegra Kirkland. This again from Talking Points Memo Livewire of September 12th of 2016. One of the things that I think is so destructive about having Team Snowden, meaning WikiLeaks, Applebaum, and Eddie the Friendly Spook working on behalf of the Trump campaign is because Donald Trump Jr. has political aspirations. From the Hullabaloo blog of September 21st of 2016, someone posting under the moniker of Digby, D-I-G as in George B-Y, a chip off the old block. And this is about Donald Trump Jr. and his desire to run for office as a, quote, patriot, unquote. And we will talk about these at greater length in a future broadcast. Again, they are in their virtual entirety in the written description for the Record. Yet another article about the same topic from Salon Magazine of September 20th, 2016 by Sophia Tesfaye, Tesfaye, T-E-S-F-A-Y-E. Yikes! Now, Donald Trump Jr. says he would love to run for office as a patriot, unquote. So Donald Jr. would basically appear to be what, for lack of a better term, we might call the Trumpenjugend. and having Eddie the Friendly Spook and Julian Assange, WikiLeaks et al. Pulling for Trump may very well motivate young people who have not achieved a lot of political sophistication from having grown up in our media and educational environments, or the media and educational environments we have nowadays. They don't have a lot of information at their disposal. And having, once again, with the release of the Oliver Stone film, having all of these calls for Edward Snowden's pardon and talking about how wonderful saint he is, it is a degree of disinformation and lying that is almost satanic in its dimensions. Well, that's all we have time for today, boys and girls. Be sure to tune in for the next exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie is not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. This concludes For the Record program number 924, Technocratic Fascism, the High Profile Hacks, and the Obverse Oswald. Update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This is being recorded on September 22nd of...